hospitals in New York. In fact, I think there are only one or two. I know there's one in Harlem Hospital, and I think there's another one at Downstate Medical Center.
It's a highly specialized problem to do it the proper way.
If you don't do it the proper way, either you get a massive blood infection or a massive scarring, correct?
Right. Increased scarring because of infection or death from septicemia are probably the two most important complications.
So that would be one category of injury created here that requires highly sophisticated medical treatment. The other, what I wanted to ask was the kinds of injuries resulting from either shrapnel or direct hits with a live round, an injury other than an instantly mortal or mortal, say, within 20-minute injury. Are they terribly sophisticated problems to deal with medically?
Oh, sure. By Vietnamese standards, they are.
What I meant was that if there was personnel available, even lacking hospitals as we know them in this country, would it make an enormous difference? In other words, field medics in the Army do a certain amount of work, and they're not very highly trained. They're paramedical people,
right,
actually.
Right.
I guess what I'm getting at is your professional opinion as to how many injuries that are definitely treatable and are not treated and therefore lead to either amputation because that's the only place you can stop it,
that's,
or death.
That's a very difficult thing to come to grips with. If we look at our own experience with our own soldiers, the rapid evacuation has made more difficult problems that were once considered lethal now rescuable. There are more guys with terribly grave rehabilitative problems in this country simply because they've been gotten off the battlefield quickly and resuscitated, mm-hmm, and haven't died from shock or loss of blood. So the same kind of logic would apply to Vietnam. The Vietnamese, or should apply, although, you know, they clearly is a double standard. And that is, if you could get the people quickly, and if you could resuscitate them, then you would be dealing with more serious problems that were then treatable. The thing is, in Vietnam, that speaks for itself, I believe, is that you see very few chest wounds, multiple abdominal wounds, because they don't live to get to the hospital. You don't see very many brain cases, chest or abdominal wounds. You see mostly extremity injuries,
mm-hmm,
or facial injuries. We've taken out of Vietnam three kids who have had, instead of mouths, little cookie cutter holes, which their lips were just completely shot away and then scarred down. Now, they could have lived, but what kind of life could they have lived?
Mm-hmm.
Just grotesque lives. One, the little fellow in Philadelphia, before we brought him out, and the plastic surgeons went to work on him, had to lie on his back and tuck food into his mouth with a mirror because there was only one little corner in which he could feed himself. And we've had two girls, both on the West Coast, who have had similar kinds of wounds.
Is that a burn or a bullet?
No, that was a shrapnel injury. Just ripped his lips away.
Medically speaking, amputation is a something along the lines of a last-ditch attempt, isn't it? I mean,
should be.
We don't. Military medicine does not call for amputation until you've gone quite a ways. Either a lot of the limb has been destroyed or infection is very severe. Correct?
Yeah. There are a lot of cases if one proceeded with good orthopedic care, you could rescue the limb. There are very few orthopedists available for the Vietnamese civilians, and so as an expedient, amputation is often done. We had a child, Nguyen Van O, whom we found in a hospital in Vietnam who had his arm shattered by a machine gun bullet. And the surgeons wanted to amputate, the parents refused, and he was lying there with just a bare bone in the cast. We brought him out to Iowa, and with excellent surgical, orthopedic and plastic surgical care, saved the arm and restored it considerably, and he's back home with his family. Now, that's the kind of thing that can be done, but it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of skill, and it takes asepsis. There are a lot of Americans who have lost limbs in this war, too. I lectured at the Philadelphia Naval Hospital to the Naval Medical Reserve Unit. And when I finished my talk, I came out just as the movie for the patients was letting out. And I walked upstream through a couple hundred guys, many of whom were double amputees and some triple amputees, some guys who had had their faces shot away, who were so ugly that they'll never leave the hospital, I'm afraid. So the cost of the war is, it affects Americans as well as Vietnamese. Terrible cost to us.
A lot of these shrapnel and similar injury kinds of effects are, I suppose, the result of the kind of fragmentation and pellet bombs and things that are used widely.
Yeah.
I mean, in addition to just direct combat, machine gun, high-speed machine guns which fire, I don't even know the statistics, but it's several thousand rounds
yes.
a minute. It's an incredible amount of...
That one gun, I think, fires 300 rounds a second, some incredible number.
And fragmentation 3,000 rounds bombs, which produce at the final, they explode three times, and the third explosion produces steel pellets, which radiate for several hundred yards, and each bomb produces several hundred clusters of these pellets.
Right.
What's the official position of the United States government and the Vietnamese government towards civilian casualties, since they are directly war-related?
The official position is that both governments welcome any attempt to help the people of Vietnam. When we first formed the committee, we went to Washington to meet with the then Assistant Secretary of State for Eastern Affairs, William Bundy, and he said that they would prefer that we worked in Vietnam, that we set up a hospital in Vietnam. We pointed out that the U.S. government was investing at that time $40 million in that, and that we couldn't. Our effort would be minimal if we attempted to work in Vietnam, but that there were an extraordinary number of hospitals in this country who still had empty beds, and that we could deal with this one specialized program. There has been continual pressure placed upon us to work exclusively in Vietnam. The government of Vietnam identified itself with this position also. Our government said that if we found any children and got passports for them, that promptly entrance visas into this country would be issued, and in fact that they would be given space that was available on outbound medevac flights. That was supposed to be fairly routine. It hasn't worked that way.
Let me just interrupt you. Yeah. There are probably some people who are listening who got up since we went into what the Committee of Responsibility does. Just briefly recapitulate that and then go on.
Yeah, we're a group of physicians, laymen, clergymen who have been bringing Vietnamese war injured children to this country for plastic surgical, orthopedic, and rehabilitative care. And we're also interested in educating the American public about the real costs of the war in terms of human costs.
I just want to get at one thing that occurred to me while you were saying that. Working in this country enables you to deal on a countrywide basis, on a national basis in Vietnam with cases, but also is part of it because of the, in your view, the complete impossibility of establishing adequate facilities there?
It's very difficult. I wouldn't say impossible. There is an organization that has developed the first-rate plastic surgical unit in Saigon, Children's Medical Relief International. They're doing a splendid job. But there's need for so many different kinds of services. There are literally hundreds of expert plastic surgeons in this country, thousands of pediatricians, thousands of orthopedists, that it seemed to us perfectly logical, since it's a 20-hour flight on a well-established air route, to just bring these kids out, put them in the hospitals, give them total care, and move them back. There seems to me to be room to do both.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be hard to develop any large effective programs in Vietnam as long as this blasted war goes on. The corruption, the social dislocation make it, I think, next to impossible to build an effective facility with personnel in that country. It costs more in Vietnam than it does in the United States. Their inflation is much more severe. The shipment of goods from this country is compromised by the fact that most of it's stolen before it ever gets here. It becomes the property of the GVN when it leaves Oakland, and we exert no inventory control, and it just disappears. You can buy it on the streets of Saigon. Mm-hmm. It's hard to see in the hospitals.
This is WBAI in New York City. So the committee had received at least the assurances of the American officials that when passports were issued to children,
right,
they would be flown out.
Right. And
what happened then?
Well, we found the initial group of children in the summer of 67 and applied to the United States government, and weeks went by. What was supposed to be automatic ratification, in fact, took weeks. They had to investigate the authenticity of the war woundedness of the children, etc., etc. This was all certified to by the GVN. We went around the barn with them many, many times on this, many calls to Washington, trips to Washington. With each group of children we've evacuated, the same thing has happened. Now, we brought to our country's attention in April of this year a group of 15 war-injured children, the first large group that we tried to move in a long time. And what was supposed to have been an automatic process took 6 weeks after the Vietnamese government had given us passports. 6 weeks these kids were sitting in Saigon hospitals while our government messed around on technicalities. And it wasn't until Nick von Hoffman and some other people covered this in the news that the kids were shaken loose. In the process, one child died.
What kind of technicalities?
Okay,
also, what do you think they were really up to?
Okay, the first thing that happened was that when our representative in Vietnam went to supposedly our liaison officer in United States Agency for International Development, the man who's supposed to help us, he said that, have we authenticated that these children are all, in fact, war injured? Well, we had the hospital charts on that. He said, that isn't adequate. Well, we don't have an intelligence network. He did not accept at that time as a valid definition of war injury a child who had picked up an unexpended piece of ammunition or explosive, or a parachute flare that had fallen short and burned somebody's house down and burned a kid. He said that in order for the child to be deemed war injured, there had to be correlations with troop movements in the area. In other words, we would have to have our own intelligence network and say, well, on such and such a day, this battalion was moving across here and they fired. This is nonsense. But he was a potent obstruction. I got a telephone call from Saigon, and then I called down the State Department and protested this, and we were told to then go to the U.S. Embassy because they were more aware of the committee's program and the political nuances. We saw a high-level officer in the embassy who said he was going to try to help us. This involved a whole new set of dossiers and covering letters being typed up and sent to this man. We have a very small staff in Saigon, by the way. A week or so went by, and he said it was out of his hands. We had to go back to this USAID officer. We continued to apply pressure from many areas. I tried to get to see Secretary Rogers. He was too busy writing a speech to see me. Then the press came in, and finally the kids were relieved. Were allowed to move.
What? Why? It's incredible. Why?
It is incredible. Well, it's incredible.
It must be more than bureaucratic.
Sure, it is.
Roadblocks.
I think there are a lot of people in the government who do not want to see injured Vietnamese children in this country because that's the truth of the war. That's one of the truths of the war, and that is that young people who have no reason to be shot and killed are being shot and killed wholesale. And I think some people are afraid of the impact of this truth.
WBAI, New York.
How many children have you been able to bring to the United States?
77. That's the work of maybe 1,000 people over 3 years, maybe the work of 40 people, very hard work on a part of maybe 40 people, small staff in Saigon, a small staff in this country, a few freelancers like myself.
How many could you take care of?
I don't know. That would depend on how much money we could raise.
You have to pay for their travel.
We pay for hospitalization. We don't pay for doctor's fees. We never paid for a doctor's fee. We paid for some of their transportation. We pay for their artificial limbs.
Mm-hmm.
So costs us about $5,000 a kid, I would say. That's what it's been running. I want to comment on that 77 children. That's 3 years' work, and every 2 hours in Vietnam, that's recapitulated. There's something like 60 to 70 civilians killed or wounded every 2 hours in Vietnam. So we recognize that this is not the answer to Vietnam's problems. It's still something that ought to be done.
What kind of injuries have those 77 children had?
Well, there have been a number of children who have lost both legs. There's one child who's lost one leg. There are three children with these bad facial injuries, lips torn away. There's been a few phosphorus burns, a few napalm burns. There have been 10 children with paraplegia, some of whom have begun to walk again. They weren't total paraplegics. They would have died very slowly in Vietnam. There have been some eye injuries, some abdominal wounds. That's about it. That embraces, I think, most of the children.
I wanted, we're going to take phone calls in about, 10 minutes or so, around that amount of time. I just want to get through a couple of more of my questions. I'm being piggy about this. I want to do my questions, and then you can do your questions. This may be listener-supported radio, but so what? I had to get up at 5 o'clock to get here. You had to get up at 4 o'clock to get here, right?
4 o'clock. I haven't done that since I was an intern.
When we started out, you were describing the scene in Vietnamese civilian hospitals, and you mentioned that families are oftentimes the basic care unit. I mean, they do the nursing care and so on and so forth. What about food? Is food provided, or is food...
In some of the hospitals, they have a central kitchen, and then they deliver it in huge pots of rice and vegetables, some fish. And in some places, the family supplements that with food, too. I was in the Da Nang Hospital at lunchtime, and they bring a huge truck out into the center, and there's pot, and there's rice, and then the patients who can come out and with their plates, and other people are brought food, primarily by their families. There's a terrible shortage of ancillary personnel in these hospitals.
When I talk to you about this, I really get the image that comes to my mind is the scene in Gone with the Wind at the Atlanta Railroad Station. Did you see the film?
Yeah, I was pretty young when I saw it.
Well, it's been back. It's been back. In any event, I get the feeling of, for those who do get into hospitals, of people sort of strewn all over in confusion and chaos and...
There's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of chaos. I think I don't want to discredit those people who are working there.
I don't mean to. They're working hard,
but it reminded me of the Crimea, those pictures of Florence Nightingale. You know, I've seen the television play that kind of just utter filth, utter crowding, and disregard for suffering.
Total, I suppose, absence of any because of. The nature of the situation, total inability to deal in a dignified fashion with someone who's
very hard to
suffering.
Very hard to. The best
2 and 3 in a bed, you said.
That's right.
Even burn cases.
Yeah.
That I suppose is the most one of the most incredible parts of it to me.
Yeah.
That conditions could be that that severe, that people injured in this fashion are I suppose they're normal hospital beds, right? They're not wall to wall beds. They're little narrow beds.
They're little narrow beds, most often without a mattress, with just a straw mat. That when it becomes so, when the stink becomes so intolerable, they finally take out and burn. Sheets are almost non-existent in many places.
Do you know if anyone has ever proposed to the United States military that it at least put up circus tents, which are in great abundance, and establish what would be, in effect, a sort of a modified field hospital? They wouldn't have to staff it, but they could come up with the linens, the tents, the beds. I mean, I'm in an Army Reserve hospital unit, and I know that we had to fool around with that kind of equipment at summer camp 2 years ago, and they could use it a hell of a lot more than...
Well, Senator Kennedy was attempting to get 9 impact hospitals set up through USAID.
I mean, even if it was only just as an adjunct to one of the existing 16 hospitals, would be an additional facility.
Yeah. Nobody knows the status of these 9 impact hospitals and the 3 major new pieces of construction that were supposed to come out. When Dr. Roth was there, he had a great deal of trouble finding actually what was operative and what was still on paper. And I think, to reiterate an earlier point, that's because our concern for the Vietnamese is only in proportion to the political mileage we get out of our medical care. It's been openly advertised as a program, our best weapon in winning the hearts and minds of the Vietnamese people. And when that's the ethos, when that's the motivation behind the thing, it's not necessarily going to be second rate.
And your word for that earlier was obscene.
Yes, I think it is, when you pervert medical care to that end.
Would you give the address of the committee and how people can get in touch with it?
Sure enough. The committee's full title is the Committee of Responsibility. Its address is 1621 Connecticut Avenue, Washington, D.C. We need money, and donations are tax-exempt. Tax deductible.
It costs, you said, about $5,000 for each case.
To complete the care of each child. Let me repeat it one more time. 1621 Connecticut Avenue, Washington, D.C.
For an interview with Dr. Herbert Needleman of the Committee of Responsibility, an organization of physicians working to bring severely injured civilians from Vietnam to the United States for therapy and restorative surgery. The interview was broadcast live over WBAI July 8th of 1970. We heard it on recording. The interviewer was Bill Schechner. Program was recorded, broadcast over WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM.